Today we're going to focus in Parshas Pinchas on two Gemaras. Okay, and hopefully between the two Gemaras, we'll learn a little bit about the identities of two of the characters who are mentioned in the Parsha. And if we have time, we'll do other stuff, but this is what we're going to focus on. Okay, the if you turn back a page, and I think we began to touch on this last week, Parshas Pinchas, or at least the story of Pinchas, begins at the end of Parshat Balak, with the beginning of chapter Chaf Hei, Per Chaf Hei, 25, and we see Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim, Vayachel Ha'am Liznos El Benos Moav. Okay, so the background is that the efforts of Balak and Bilam to defeat the Bnei Yisrael through speech didn't work. One of the first Rashis in the Parsha talks about, in last week's Parsha talks about, we did that Rashi last week, the one how Moab and Midian normally fought against each other, but they got together to fight against the Bnei Yisrael, where the people of Moab said, hey, look, their leader grew up in Midian, depending on which Midrash you follow, Moshe was there between 40 and 60 years, married, you know, one of the chief daughters of Midian. So they said, well, what's his strength? And they said, well, his only strength is with his mouth. So Rashi says that, okay, so if his strength is with his mouth, then we need to get somebody to beat them whose strength is with his mouth, and that's why Bilam was hired. Okay. Now, but of course that didn't work because of other reasons, and Bilam was unsuccessful. So they said, look, if it doesn't work that way, so let's go to the oldest trick in the book, and the oldest trick in the book is to send in ladies. W.C. Fields always said he doesn't want to appear on stage with either an animal, a baby, or a beautiful woman, because then all the attention would be on, not on him. So mm-hmm. Okay, anyway. Right. So they go to this. Now, by the way, there's just a beautiful lesson here in which speaks to us in a contemporary sense, which is that if you can't beat them with their strength and with what you think is your strength, so what do? You sacrifice your children in order to do that. Because that's what the daughters of, you know, they said, Benos Moav. Oh, well, we can't beat you our way. We don't want to confront you on the battlefield. So who are we going to send in? Because we're chicken? We're going to send in our kids. And our kids is going to be the way how we're going to destroy you.
Right, that's mean, but it also, because Lot, he was, when he was confronted mm-hmm. by the crowd in Sodom, he said, take my daughters.
Yeah. Right, so that is...
That's here.
That was... Certainly a preview to this idea that we have right. that we have here.
And it does work better that silent persecution versus the blueprints of Egypt and Paro. This is like the rush, you know, the Holocaust, you know, here there. Mm-hmm. This is like the Russian persecution that we experienced. You sort of leave us alone. We sort of intermarry. We sort of slowly lose our faith.
Well, I was thinking more of suicide bombers. It's like, oh, I'm a 50-year-old and I'll send all the 20-year-olds who I drug up and send there, or I brainwash them. I'll send my kids, but I will never go on a suicide bomb mission.
True, but if you just take your time, like, we fall. Right.
Yeah. Okay. At the same time, the other message is that this story with Pinchas, at the end of the Parsha, is the difference between the way Balak and Bilam perceive the Jewish people and the way we perceive it within. Because in the Balak and the Bilam stance, they look at the Bnei Yisrael from the outside, and all Bilam could say is, Matovu Alech Yaakov, right? Tamoz Nafshi Mosi Sharim, I should die the way the righteous die because these people are only righteous. So what they see is only good stuff from a distance. There may be problems inside, and that's what Pinchas sees, and that's what Pinchas deals with, but that's not what the outsiders see and perceive. And that, I think, is in general, is the way in which conflict, you know, within a group should be dealt with. From everybody, from the outsider's perspective, things should be okay. From the insider's perspective, look, we know we have issues, we're going to deal with them. And whether that's a community, or whether that's a family, or whether that's, you know, nobody needs to know our garbage. And that's what's, I think, so evident here. Okay, and 24,000 people died. So now we turn to the beginning of Pinchas, and we learn the aftermath of Pinchas's actions. Pinchas receives a great gift. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Heishev eschamatzim yabonei Yisrael b'kanoz k'nasi b'sochamu l'kilisi es b'nei Yisrael b'kinasi. Because Pinchas was zealous, and he basically defended God's name, so he is given the covenant of peace.
What is that?
What's a covenant of peace?
A covenant of peace? So there's a lot of it. There may be different interpretations as to what that is. One thing. There's one interpretation that suggests that Pinchas ends up living for a very, very, very long time.
Right.
There's a midrash which says that Pinchas hu Eliyahu. Okay, that Pinchas is Eliyahu. Now, what that means is subject to different interpretations. One interpretation is that it's a reincarnation of the soul. Another interpretation is that no, Pinchas is Eliyahu. That when you see an Eliyahu come along, that's Pinchas just under a different name. It's the same guy. And there are a lot of people in the Torah and in Tanakh who we see that the Chazal certainly put upon them different identities to the point that they seem to span a very long period of time, or even not different identities. Like the idea of Og. Who's Og? Is it the same Og from way back when?
No.
From right, there's a midrash that says that Og is holding on to the Teva, but that Og meets Avraham. You know, who's the Palit? Og. That, you know, that Og appears, and I don't remember when the first time the name Og actually appears in Torah, but it's a lot earlier than when Moshe is fighting against him. So this idea that Og is living for hundreds and hundreds of years. There are some midrashim which pin the paro that meets Yaakov as having been the same person who met Avraham back in the day. Okay, which, you know, which is kind of ironic if that's the case, because he says to Yaakov, "Well, how old are you? Kama yimei shnei chayecha? How old are you?" It's like, "Well, how old are you?" You know, okay. And we're also going to see about Zimri right now. Actually, that's the Gemara which we're going to look at. That Zimri, maybe an old guy. In any case, the Brisi Shalom. So some say it's referring to the covenant, the Bris itself. In other words, that Pinchas is a staunch defender of the Bris. We mention him at the Bris.
Right.
We mention Pinchas. We mention Eliyahu because of their you know, zealous nature in defending it. In other words, Zimri, what he was doing was obviously the opposite of respecting the Bris,
right,
because of the way in which he was using his. Pardon my crude nature. Okay, but that's number one. And number two, that he was and it's defined by the next line. That the Bris Shalom, the covenant of peace, is the covenant of Kuna Salam, the covenant of everlasting Kuna. The priesthood. Because up until that point, Pinchas was not considered a Kohen, because the rule of a Kohen was that Aaron and his sons and anyone who would be born after that would be a Kohen.
He was born before.
And Pinchas was born before that moment. And because he was born before that moment, so he wasn't grandfathered in, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Hey, are you gonna be quiet? Okay. I don't think anybody minds. But
he's so happy.
I know. Thank God. Okay.
We're doing this crazy literature. Do you remember with Orly about maybe Zimri or Pinchas is a Gilgal of Rabbi Akiva?
Did you ever hear anything like this?
I may have heard it, but I don't remember where it's from.
Because he was also a zealot, Rabbi Akiva.
So a Gilgal maybe, but definitely not.
It's not
the, not the same guy. That's for sure.
No, they said a Gilgal. Right,
okay.
They said a Gilgal.
Okay.
And it was a Tikkun and whatever.
So anyway, finally the Torah tells us, now by the way, this is a rare occasion where the Torah tells us the names of all the perpetrators. Because sometimes I shouldn't say rare, because you get Dasan Aviram, you get Korach, but even with Dasan Aviram and Korach, you don't get that much else. In the case of other people who sin or who challenge, you don't get names. Usually people are anonymous. Even in the case of the Mikalel, right, the one who blasphemes, we get his mother, and that's it. We don't even get his own name. Okay. I found an interesting blog, by the way, this lady who I discovered afterwards when, as I was reading through the blog, that she intermarried. She used the story of the Mikalel to justify her intermarriage, saying that the Torah advocates it. She's clearly very bright. She studied in Drisha. She writes this on her blog. If you do a Google search of the Mikalel, Mi'Kallel, you'll probably find it. And if not, I can send you the link, because I held out to it. Okay. So anyway, no, she points out the fact that you know that the person is left anonymous and only mentions the mother, that just indicates how that's important. Okay, no, it's a nice lima, you know, but what?
Who it is, they just say a man.
No, it says.
No,
at the end of Balak it doesn't say, but here it says. Right, but it's only five psukim later.
Right.
The guy's name was Zimri ben Salu, and he was the prince of Shimon. Okay, then she is of a family, of a very significant family,
right,
in Midian. Okay, so let us take a look. I believe this one is in Shabbos. Okay. So our question is, who is this guy Zimri? That's what we're going to focus on now. And I'm going to read you the Gemara. The Gemara is in Masechet Shabbos, 82b. It's really 82a and 82b. But we'll start, we're going to go backwards. Hold on. No, I'm sorry, not Shabbos. Sanhedrin 82b. Shabbos is the other Gemara, which I'm going to look at. Sanhedrin 82b. Okay? So, the Gemara says that this guy Zimri, he gives us five identities for who this guy Zimri is. Okay? One second. Here it is. Zimri, Zimri had five names. Zimri, the son of Salu, Shaul, Shaul ben Akhnanis, Ushlumiel ben Surishadai. Okay? He is called five different things. Again, Zimri, that's one name. Ben Salu, that's another name. Shaul, that's a third name. Ben Akhnanis is a fourth name. And Shlumiel ben Surishadai is the fifth name. Okay, and it explains what each of these names come from. Zimri, he was called Zimri, al Shanasa Kabetza Hamuzeret. Okay, I'm just going to read you the translation.
What?
He was called Zimri because, brackets, his testicles became like an addled egg. Okay? Next, Ben Salu, he was called the son of Salu, because al shehisli avonot shel mishpachto, because he caused people to speak of the sins of his family, and basically to compare his members to adulterers. Next, he's called Shaul, al shehish ilatzmo ledvar avera. He was called Shaul because he lent himself, with a play on words, shehish il, he lent himself to a sinful thing. Ben Akhnanis, he was called the son of the Canaanite woman. Al Sha'asa Ma'ase Kina'an, because he did a practice of Kina'an, the son of Noach. Okay, which is not the son of Noach, the grandson of Noach. Okay, Uma Shemo, what was his real name? His real name was Shlumiel ben Surishadai. That was his real name. Okay, now if you look, all these names are, now Zimri ben Salu we have obviously over here. Okay. What about this name of Shaul ben Akhnani? Does anybody know where that comes from? Familiar, isn't it?
Yes.
Shaul ben Akhnani. What is that?
Wait. Who was the Nikalel was somebody?
No, that's the daughter of Shemimo Shlomit Bas Divri. Separate thing. Okay? Mm. When do we have the term Shaul ben Akhnani?
Yes, you have.
Okay, it's in Parshas Vayigash.
Okay.
Okay, now you have to go look it up and find it. It's in the genealogy of Yaakov's family. Let's see if you can find it. There are plenty of hints. Zimri was from the tribe of Shimon. That's another hint.
Go right to Shimon.
Okay, there's another hint. So find it. What page is it on? Did you find it yet?
I'm in Vayigash.
Good
Shaul Samakna. It's
okay.
It's a good, it's page 258.
Correct.
What parak is it?
It's parak Mem Vav.
Mem Vav, okay.
Mem Vav Yud. Okay, so in Shimon's children, we'll read all the names of Shimon's children. Right? Right, so of all of them, you get only one of them is called Ben Haknanis. Okay, and it would seem one could make the argument that this, you know, at least according to the Gemara, that this Zimri guy is the same guy as that, maybe. If you want to take the translation literally, even though they're saying that he has five names. So what is this Shaul ben Akhnanis? Some people say Shaul ben Akhnanis is a follow-up of a different midrash, that after the Shechem incident, that Shimon, that Dina felt, look, I've been raped, nobody's going to ever want to marry me anymore, I'm a you know, battered soul, whatever, and Shimon says, I'll take you under my wing. Which is a topic of a different discussion, but that Shaul ben Haknanis is the product of the Shechem Dina relationship. Okay, some say that that's what Shaul ben Haknanis is. Okay, that, again, the Kananis refers to again the Maase Kanaan, an act of Kanaan, which is what Shechem did to Dina. Okay, there are other interpretations. That's the most prominent one. Okay, what else did we see that his name was according to the Gemara? Shlumiel ben Tzurishadai. Come on in. Shlumiel ben Tzurishadai. What is Shlumiel ben Tzurishadai? Anybody know that name?
No.
One of the Nesiim. Now you have to find it. When the Nesiim are listed, we have Shlumiel ben Tzurishadai.
Which one? Shlach?
No, not Shlach, because everyone in Shlach died. So let's see if it's in Naso. It would be in Parag Zion.
Okay. Here we go.
Did you find it?
Fifth day leader of the Chumash.
All right, there it is, right? Okay, Shlumi Elben Sarisha dies 768. Okay. Now, when you hear the name Shlumiel ben Tzurishadai, what Yiddish word comes out at you? What? Shlumiel.
Shlumiel.
Right? This is the original Shlumiel. No, I'm not kidding. It's true. It's true. The term Shlumiel comes from this Shlumiel. Okay, now the question is, why was that connection made? When you talk about a Shlumiel, you think about some guy who's, can't do anything right. That's it.
Okay.
What's the difference between a Shlumiel and a Shlumazel? Leo Rostin writes about this. A Shlumiel is the guy who drops it. A Shlumiel is the guy who drops the soup and it lands on the Shlumazel. That's the way. Okay.
Someone who fornicates in front of a holy site is hardly a Shlumiel.
Right. Okay. Except that what makes the guy a Shlumiel? That he's so dense. Yeah. Yeah.
He can actually do that.
I know, but that's not a Shlumiel.
Well, he's not very, very brazen or very, very stupid.
Right.
So,
right.
Goes on the second one.
Either they're brazen or stupid.
Okay. So let's go back to the Gemara.
And don't forget Slofa. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. We're going to get to that. Okay. Believe me, that's the other Gemara that we're going to look at. Okay? Here, I'm going to read you the Gemara. I brought the art scroll just because it makes the reading the translation easier as opposed to reading everything and translating it. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm reading this. This is the Gemara. Halach Shifto Shal Shimon Eitzel Zimri Bokei. So the tribe of Shimon went to Zimri. They said to him, they're judging cases of capital punishment, and you, our leader, you sit and you remain silent? The capital punishment against members of our tribe. So what did Zimri do? He arose and gathered 24,000 Israelites and went to Cusbi, a Midianite woman. He said to her, submit yourself to cohabiting with me. She said to him, I am a king's daughter. And so my father ordered me, do not submit except to the greatest of them. So Zimri said to her that he also is a tribal prince, and not only that, but he is greater than Moshe, because he is the leader of the tribe of Shimon, who was the second issue of his mother's womb, meaning Zimri, who is the leader of Shimon, while Moshe is the leader of the tribe of Levi, who is the third from his mother's womb. So who comes first? Zimri. Of course, what about Reuben. Okay, anyway. Zimri then grabbed Cosby by her plaited hair and brought her to Moshe. Zimri said to Moshe, son of Amram, Ben Amram, right, he insults him, is this woman forbidden or permitted to me? If you say she's forbidden, who permitted you to marry the daughter of Yisro, who's also a Midianite woman? At that moment, the ruling that zealots may kill one who cohabits with an idolatress escaped Moshe, and all the people wept loudly, and that's what it says, that they were weeping at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And then it says that Pinchas saw, what did Pinchas saw? He saw that Moshe had forgotten the ruling, and he recalled it. And he said, Pinchas said to Moshe, brother of my father's father, did you not teach me upon your descent from Har Sinai regarding one who cohabits with a Kutit woman, that zealots may kill him? Moshe said, let the one who reads the letter be the agent to carry out its instruction. And essentially, that's why Pinchas went out to attack and to kill Zimri to carry out the law.
If you asked, you weren't allowed to do it. That there was like, it wasn't the sort of fact that you could say, may I go in and kill as a zealot this person who's
right? No, so
with
he, his, no, he. I think what the Gemara says is, Moshe, isn't this the law?
Okay, so he's only clarifying.
Right, he's clarifying the halacha, so to speak. So, oh, yes, that is. Go to. And it's interesting. There are other places in the Torah where we find similarly that Moshe forgets a halacha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we may have mentioned some of them when they come. What?
Daughters of Tzlachat.
Right, daughters of Tzlachat is another one. There's another one with the sons of Aaron. When right after the first two sons of Aaron died, Moshe says to the other ones, "Okay, you have to eat the karban." And they say, well, "Hold on a second, but we're Avelin. We're not supposed to be eating meat right now." So Moshe's like, "All right, you're right." But Moshe got really angry at them. It's an interesting study, I guess, to see A, when Moshe's forgetting, if there's a common theme. B, the fact that Moshe does forget at all,
right,
which is an indication of look, if Moshe could forget, it's really fine. Okay, okay.
Negotiate
sim,
or is that what you're like? Right.
So maybe those cases as well, the negotiate sim and the mikalel,
so
in both cases.
Out what the law is.
Right. Right, in both cases.
Right,
in the Kalel.
Right,
so, you know. Okay. Okay. So the question is, what's up with this Zimri guy? If he's Shaul ben Akananis, if he's Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai, and you know, whatnot, and what does this Gemara say about Zimri and the way in which he relates to Moshe? Now, this is a whole idea of Ben Amram, son of Amram. Now, was Zimri right or was he wrong with his argument to Moshe about the fact that Moshe married a Midianite woman?
He did marry a Midianite woman.
Okay, so the facts are correct,
right,
about meaning that fact.
Except
what about yeah?
We have to assume that Tzipora converted, and that in the case of what is her name,
Cosby.
That she had no intention thereof.
Right. So we certainly want to believe that. From how could Moshe? Of course. On the other hand, there are a couple of elements of which Zimri is leaving out of the equation. Number one, whatever Moshe did was pre Matan Torah,
right,
before being chosen as a leader. Despite that, or maybe because Moshe was married to Tzipora. But, you know, another point of order is that we'll also recall that Tzipora, in circumcising her son, at some point indicates whose side of the fence she's on. Okay? Before Matan Torah, B, whatever Tzipora did, whether she converted or whether she certainly showed whose side she was on, and the fact that Moshe's no longer with her anyway, which is a different discussion. Okay? Zimri's being arrogant. Zimri's being flippant. Zimri's being completely out of line. God chose Moshe after their marriage. So yes.
I think I've heard this before, frankly. But here it says that he's the son of the prince of the house of Shimon.
Oh.
But all these other times he's the Ben HaKnanis.
So no, only one of them.
No, Ben Saul twice. Shaul Ben HaKnanis.
No, Shaul is one name, and Ben Hakananit is another name.
Okay, so okay. I guess.
No, and Shlumiel is the Nasi of the tribe.
Why is it two names?
Ben Hakananit is derogatory. It's not nice to call that. Way.
Correct.
You grow badly, like you bastard, you. You right. son, you know. So,
right.
So that low self-esteem that's very popular in American psychology today mm-hmm. could be factored in here, and it's significant.
Right. So I want to share with you a thought which I once heard.
I think you should get over it.
Right. Oh, for sure. For sure. But what's fascinating is this. If Zimri, right, exactly. Like, he should be above that, right?
Well, no, not just, I mean, personally. I mean, I just finished listening to Sheila while driving about the whole checking it. If somebody's a prince of Israel, his lineage is okay. There aren't any strange, possibly adulterous unions. There aren't any.
There's nothing weird. It would matter. Dina. Let's say he is that Shaul Ben Akranes. Let's say he is.
He's been fine.
Okay, he's been wonderful.
But if you say that he went to him in the Midrash and said Ben Amram,
right.
He's obviously flipped over the lineage thing.
Right, but the concept of Ben Amram is meant to be, you know, an insult. Like right. you'll never reach the toes of your dad.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if you have to succumb to that, then you're feeling insecure. For sure.
I mean that there's no question that the Gemara is looks negatively upon him. I mean there's no right. question about that. But I wanted to share with you a thought I once heard from I don't remember who it was. It was a prominent American Rosh Yeshiva, and somehow in my head I keep on thinking either Rav Henkin or some, but I may be wrong, so I don't remember who it is, but who said, you know, according to one approach, this approach that he may be Shaul Ben Akhnanis, that indicates that he is at least, because this is in the 40th year of the desert, plus the amount of times that they were in Egypt, which is 210 years, so this guy is at least 250 years old, according to that interpretation. So this Rosh Yeshiva, who was a little advanced in years, said, "What did Zimri really want? Okay, what's he doing? He's going and he's having relations with some lady in front of everybody." He says, the guy says, this Rosh Yeshiva says, "Ich bin ein alter Yid." I'm an old Jew. He says, what it looks like Zimri wanted was not what Zimri wanted. He said it wasn't about this act per se. Okay? He says, what it was about was, there's one thing he says which I want at my advanced age, and that is kavod. He says, I want to be respected. I don't want to be looked at as, you know, an oisvarf, a guy who's over the hill who doesn't exist anymore. You know, I don't want, what I want is kavod. And so he says the only way that he could draw attention, he can show what he's all about and who he's all about is through getting attention in this way.
That's not for kavod.
We may not view it as being for kavod. But the point is that I think what this Rosh Yeshiva was saying is that if Zimri's, and this is the critique of Zimri. If Zimri's only way to express why he's, you know, why he should be respected is in this manner, right? There are those who say, and maybe tongue in cheek, but they say that most wars that were ever fought in the history of the world were fought over this type of issue, meaning General X versus General Y, who has more prowess in dot dot dot. Okay, everyone understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So if that's the case, then that is what Zimri was trying to show. You, Moshe, or me? Who's the man? Well, I'm going to show you who's the man, and that's what's going to earn me honor and respect. Mm-hmm. Okay, but what's the problem? Shlemiel, that's not the way you do it. Okay, you want to show that you're somebody who is deserving of respect, then you have to conduct yourself in a different way. You have to earn the respect. It doesn't just happen just because you happen to be the prince of the tribe of Shimon, and that's one step above Levi. Where does that come from? Nobody ever viewed respect that way. Did anybody ever say to Yosef once he was king, "Well, Yosef, you're one of the youngest of the kids. I'm sorry, Reuven's going to be taking over now in Egypt." No, that's not the way it operates. You earn it, and I think that's an important lesson that Zimri missed, whether he was an old guy or whether he was a young guy or somewhere in between, whether he was this Shlumiel Ben Suri Shaddai. And
that's his greatest attribute, that he had anivut.
Yeah.
And someone who has that does not chase after kavod.
Right. Exactly. You know, and it comes.
And the guy was so off about what Moses' attributes were and why he was humble like that. But that's really it. Like, that he didn't chase kavod.
Right. And when you don't chase it, it comes. Mm-hmm. No, Rabbi, we want to respect you. Leave me alone. No. Okay. Wait, yes.
I mean, it makes sense, except for the fact that he's the prince of his tribe. His mm-hmm. entire tribe didn't realize that this guy had problems, or that maybe possibly way back when he might be the son of a Canaanite woman, or might be possibly the son of an incestuous union. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense that his tribe would ever allow him to be prince over them. You know what I mean? If all of this stuff has...
No, so the Dina component is not relevant, because we fully accept a product of such a union as a member of our people. Absolutely.
Right,
okay? We don't, you know... I mean, there's a lot of difficulty even with the concept of a mamzer. No, because what did he do? It's his parents who are at fault. But Dina, it's not even, you know, the child is not considered anything like that. The child is considered a full Jew. And the concept of Ben HaKenan is, we can look at it, you know, the way Monica said. On the other hand, we can say, no, Ben HaKenan is, you know, we know where you came from, but we also know how you came about. And it could be a badge of respect. Look, I'll tell you, there's a guy in my father's shul who used to, he may still do it. He used to put, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 questions that he had. He typed them on a piece of paper, and he'd send them over to my father. That, I guess, is probably in the days before email. It's definitely in the days before email. Okay, and I remember every now and then I'd see it on the dining room table or something like that, and I'd look at the questions. And one of the questions that the guy asked once was, you know, if a child is adopted and his parents are not Jewish, you know, his natural parents are not Jewish, and he's raised in an observant home, and he's going to be, you know, participating in shul, and he was converted as a baby, does his name need to be Ben Avraham Avinu, which is the standard name used for a convert when he is called to the Torah? Because most people don't know he's adopted, and even those who know, like, these are his parents. These are the ones who, you know, who raised him. They got him when he was a baby. So does he have to be called that way? And the answer is no. That a person who raises somebody in your home is as if, the Gemara says, it's as if you've given birth to him. So that child can be named after the father who raised him. Okay, now. At the same time, so for some people it's a stigma because, you know, you've always been Jewish for your whole life as far as you know, so why be called otherwise? But let's say somebody who's a convert. Everybody knows the person is a convert. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Okay? You know, to use the punchline of the joke of the Jew who finds a shul in the Orient, and he walks up and says, "What are you guys doing?" And they say, "What, you don't know? We are Jewish." And he says, "You guys are Jewish? That's ridiculous. I'm a Jew." And the Chinese rabbi says, "Funny, you don't look Jewish." Okay. So everybody knows the guy's a convert, okay? Because he don't look Jewish. Okay? Whatever it is. So I remember a guy who was a Hispanic fellow. Okay, I hope I said that correctly. And his name was Carlos, and everybody knew he was a convert. And when he would get called up to the Torah, he would say, whatever his name was, Chaim Ben Avraham Avinu. He'd say it loud. Okay. He was proud. And you know something? For somebody who goes through that, it could be something you're proud of. Absolutely. That's the way it goes. And it's not a stigma. So it's really a matter of perception. So Ben HaKenan could be an insult. At the same time, it could be not an insult.
Absolutely.
Okay? So, all right, with that, to answer your question, I don't think that his lineage per se was a problem. Because if it were a problem, then you're right. He wouldn't have been up there. But whether something snapped, or whether, you know, whether he just got to a point where, I mean, look, what's Korach? Korach's lineage wasn't good enough. Korach snapped. Korach said, you know, it's not good enough for me. And that's what Zimri's going through. Zimri, you know, it's not good enough for me. I need more. And this guy Moshe is what's
actually upright, righteous person up to that point.
Right. I mean, and we have examples of that in the Gemara as well. I mean, think of Elisha ben Avuya, Right. I mean, Rav Meir says that you're my, you know, even after you became an apikoros, you're my teacher, and there are other examples of people who, whether they go over the deep end or off the deep end, or they just have a bad moment. In his case, maybe it was a bad moment, which was a really horrible moment, and that's where his life ended. But the point is, though, that no matter his identity, if you throw him, you kind of see the chain of his life, and you say, you know, if this is the way it's all going to end up, and this is where the result is going to be, to learn from that a person needs to follow a certain path. And have an end goal. And the end goal should be something which is attainable at the outset. Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai is the guy who becomes this Zimri, then, yeah, he was certainly righteous at this point. All these Nisim in Parshas Naso are considered the top of the top. By the time he gets to be Zimri, you know, something has changed. And that's why he's given these names. Did we talk last week about names which are given? Did we talk about it? Oh, we talked. Did we talk? Did I mention how Bilam ben Beor? Did I mention that here?
We mentioned that a few years later they meet up.
Oh, we did mention that. Okay, but I mentioned Bilam ben Beor.
You
the
didn't
name.
Say the significance of Beor.
Right. So the significance of Beor. So does anybody know what the word Beor means?
It like from fire.
No, that's ayin. That's ayin.
No, with a.
With ayin, right?
What?
Beor.
Yeah, but with an iron. Yeah,
burn.
With an iron. What is it?
It's a burn.
It's a burn.
What? No, no, no. Vatesh ta'ida ubi'iram.
Oh, kids. Or animals.
No, animals.
Sorry, the hachet.
Okay.
The hachet, I mean.
Right.
Well, kids, goats.
Yeah,
you know.
She's been talking with my children.
Oh, stop it.
Did I get it? Did I bring it along tomorrow? Okay. Oh no, it's 1:13. Okay. So the answer is cattle, right? Animals. So there are those who say there's actually a Gemara that suggests it's in Sanhedrin 105 that suggests that either Beor was Bilam's father and he slept with animals, or Bilam is called Ben Beor because he himself slept with animals. Okay, and the point from stuff like that is that there are names which are given to people in the Torah. The name itself is usually the person's name in some way or another, or at least once, because there are a number of people who are assumed to have different identities later on. But when you get to the Ben so-and-so, the so-and-so might not necessarily be the person's father's name. Okay, think Avner ben Ner. Mm-hmm. There are those who say that Avner's mother was the lady who Shaul went to, mm-hmm. to ask for, you know, to meet Shmuel again. So what is Ner? The product of, you know, candle, witchcraft, whatever it is. Some say that Ner does not mean the father. Kalev ben Yefune. In Navi, Kalev is called Kalev ben Chetzron. And it's not assumed to be a different person.
Right.
So some say Yefune is from the word Pina, Pina Atzmo, Me'atzas, Miraglim, that he turned himself away from the the words of the Miraglim. Okay. So similarly, Zimri and Ben Salu, if his name is Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai, and you'll notice, by the way, that in just about all of the names of the Nesi'im, you have either one, you have a form of God's name. In Shlumiel, you have it twice. Shlumiel, ben Tzuri Shaddai. You have that. You have a lot of El Yasaf, ben Du'uel. There's a lot of God's name going on in all the names of the Nisim, which is an indicator of something special about them. It's an interesting study. You go look at it and count how many times you find God's names in their names. Okay. So now that's the focus on Zimri. Now let's focus on Slachar. Slavchad?
Yeah, no, it's just I was okay.
No, yeah, we're shifting. We're shifting gears.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Slavchad. Slavchad. Our question is, who?
Skip, yeah.
Not so much who is Tzlacha. We kind of know who Tzlacha is. Okay? What was Tzlacha's sin? Take a look at... You're on page 886, Parakhav Zion, Sukim... Well, it starts with Pasuk Vav. I'm sorry. It starts at the beginning of Parakhav Zion. Okay? Sorry. I was skipping that. Batikravna benoz Tzlachad. Ben Hefer, Ben Gilad, Ben Machir, Ben Menashe. Okay? So it gives us, Ben Yosef. It gives us Tzlachad's lineage all the way up to Yosef. And Elish Mos Ben Hasav, these are the names of his daughters. Machla, Noah, Chagla, Milka, Tirtza. Right, those are their names. Okay, but Tamod Lefnei Moshe, they stand in front of Moshe, they say, and in front of Elazar HaKohen, and the Nisim, and everybody, and they say, Pasuk Gimel, Avinu, Meis Bamidbar, V'hu, Lo Haya B'Socho Ida, Hanoadim, Al Hashem, Badas Korach. He was not part of the group, which basically confronted God with Korach, Ki V'chet Omeis, because in his own sin he died, Uvanim, Lo Hayu Lo. Okay, he died with his own sin, and he did not have any children. Okay, so now the question is, what was his... He did not have any sons, sorry.
What's his sin?
What's his sin? Uh-huh. Exactly.
He was supposed to be the guy who collected on Shabbos.
Okay, no? So that is one opinion. That's why we're looking at the Gemara. You take a look at Rashi.
Collected wood.
Okay, you take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Pasuk Gimel, okay, so it's four lines on the bottom. Hulu Ayah, he says, Lefi shahayu bo'os lomar bechet omeis, because they were coming to say that he's in his sin he died, Mizkaku lomar lo bechet mislonanim, velo ba'adas korash yitzu al kadosh baruch hu, elo bechet ol vado meis. They had to say that he did not die with the sin of the complainers, and not of that of Korach, elo bechet ol vado meis, but in his sin alone, and he did not cause others to sin with him. Rabbi Akiva Omer Mikoshesh Eitzim Haya. Rabbi Shimon Omer Minahama Pilim Haya. Rabbi Akiva says he was the Mikoshesh Eitzim, the gatherer of wood. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he was one of the Ma'apilim.
Who are they again, Rabbi, the Ma'apilim? I forget.
Okay, the Ma'apilim were those who, in the story of the aftermath of the spies, they said, let's go up to the land. When Moshe said, sorry, we're already going to be in the desert 40 years. You guys missed your opportunity. And they go up. It says, Vayapilu lalo salahar, that they went up, and they got fought back, and that was the end of it. Mm-hmm. They never tried again. Okay? Now, let's take a look at the Gemara. Or at least listen. Okay? Okay. So it's you see Rashi quotes the Gemara there? Shabbos, Sadi Vav, Amadeus, Sadi Zayin, Amad Aleph. This is, I remember many times, you know how some people say, I once heard so-and-so, such and such rabbi say, Rabbi Soloveitchik once said, come on, he must have said it more than once. Many times I heard Rabbi Norman Lamb say that when Rashi quotes another source, go look up that source. Okay, you want to be a real lamdan, you want to know how to learn, you never take Rashi's word for it. Don't trust Rashi. That was his line. Okay, and he was quoting it from somebody else, from, I don't remember if it was from his father, from a teacher of his, maybe it was Rabbi Soloveitch, I don't remember, who said, look it up. You look it up, and that's what you do. So here we have the Gemara. Okay, you'll notice, of course, that there are two opinions here. So, Mikoshesh Eitzim is only the first opinion that Rashi records, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So this is the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, okay, the rabbis taught in a Braisa, the gatherer of wood, this was Tzlachad. As it says, Vayu Bnei Yisrael, Ba-Midbar, and the Israelites were in the Midbar, in the wilderness, and they found a man, etc. And it says here, the girls say, and further on it states, Avinu Meis Ba-Midbar. Our father died in the wilderness. Just as there, in our parsha, it's referring to Tzlachad, it says also in the case of the Mikoshesh Eitzim, when they were Ba-Midbar, the guy who's gathering wood, that's also Slafchad, Divrei, Rabbi Akiva, these are the words of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra says, Akiva, either way, you are destined to give an accounting for what you have just expounded. Because if it's true, as you state, that the gatherer was Slafchad, then you have sinned because the Torah concealed it and you revealed it. The Torah says, that in the time the Torah, the people were in the Midbar, and they found an ish mikoshei sheitzim, an ish. Why is the guy left anonymous? He's left anonymous for a reason, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah says. So how can you, Rabbi Kiva, say that this is Slavchad? Not only that, let's say it's not Slavchad. You're pinning on Slavchad something which he may not have done. Okay? You're maligning a righteous man. Al-Oso Tzadi. Gemara says, Ve'elaha gamar gzer shava. What's Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah's objection? Why Rabbi Akiva has received the gzer shava he expounded as a tradition from his teachers reaching back to Sinai. So he says, Rabbi Akiva is just repeating something which he learned. So if that's the case, the Torah has not concealed the identity of the gatherer, but has indeed revealed it to be Tzlafchad. So how can Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah accuse Rabbi Akiva of revealing what the Torah has concealed? So the answer is, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah did not receive the Gzera Shava as a tradition, the comparison. Since he did not learn that from his teachers, that's why he questioned Rabbi Akiva about it. So, but and according to him, where did he get that? What is Tzlafchad's identity? Not to, you know, throw a bone against Tzlafchad, but he said it comes from Vayapilu. They defiantly ascended the mountain. Okay? Now, and it goes into different discussions about what different things that they argue about. But essentially, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah says, and I don't know why he quotes it as Rabbi Shimon, see, which just goes to show, you have to look it up, because I don't know if Rabbi Shimon says the same thing, because I didn't get that far. But in that Gemara, it's clearly Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah. So he says that Tzlafchad was one of the people who died in the Mapilim, and all of them are anonymous, and they weren't doing something bad. They were doing something to go into, you know, to try to go into the land. So now let me ask you a question. Let's think logically for a moment. I'm not making this up. Okay, the opinion which I'm going to tell you now is in the Zohar. Okay, question is this: they say our father died in the desert. Okay, I'll give a contemporary example. Okay, let's say somebody died a few years ago. Okay, let's say somebody died in 2001. Okay, I'll just use that as an example because we can all relate to it. Okay. Oh, this person died, but it wasn't in 9/11. Okay, the person died for a different event. Something else happened. Okay. Now maybe I'm wrong, but when would you assume that the person died? Before 9/11, same day as 9/11, but obviously not in the attacks. Or after 9/11. If I'm going to compare the person's death to 9/11, what would you say?
After.
Right? After. Mm-hmm. Okay? Right? Because otherwise, why would I bring 9/11 into the equation? The person died at the beginning of 2001.
This is in your personal experience, though. Because you're the one narrating.
Right, so...
You've experienced both.
Okay.
So you might have narrated in that fashion, not necessarily because it happened afterwards, but because in your experience, that's how it went.
Granted. Agreed. But let's say there was an event in January 2011. Okay? And the person died in April. So would I compare it to January 2011 or 9/11? What would you do?
Probably. Well,
okay. 9/11 is not a good example because it's such a huge thing.
If you're talking to somebody else, okay. People locate it by major.
Okay,
roles.
So let's say there was like four different events that took place: one in January, one in March, one in June, and one in September, and they were all equal. Everybody knew about all of them. Okay, what would you do?
Then you go by the closest.
Before. Okay. So let's say it was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. Mekoshesh Eitzim appears at the end of Parsha Shlach. What event took place in which people died? The Meraglim, right? What about other events which took place in Parsha Baloscha? Let's say not so many people died of the Meraglim, only the spies died. Okay? Or the case of the Ma'apilim was in Shlach. Okay? Or let's say it was somebody who was complaining in Parsha Baloscha. Right? I would compare it to something that took place. Mm-hmm. If it was the Mekoshesh Eitzim, or the Ma'apilim, why would I compare it to Korach? Oh, because Korach is such a bad sin, because Korachs are 9/11?
Because his property might have been forfeit. All of the people who participated in
Slavchad's Menashe. Sorry, don't buy it.
Well,
everyone involved in there was Reuven. Reuven and Korach's people who were Levim. Slavchatz from Menashe. Wasn't part of it.
So why would she even mention that?
Exactly. Why would you even mention that?
She's trying to prove that his daughters had a right to inherit his property, that mm-hmm. his sin didn't cause him to forfeit.
Okay. So maybe the people I can't say the children of Korach. I mean, the Torah tells us they didn't die, but they're Levim, so whatever they got, okay. So not a good example. But let's look at it from a different perspective. Okay? Our father died in the desert. Avinu meis bamidbar, v'hu lo haya badas Korach. What was the sin of the people of Korach?
They
were right, trying to get close to God in some way. Okay? Trying to get close to God through challenging
Moshe.
Okay. Now here we have a difference. Okay, it's not that he didn't die with Korach. It's that perhaps, and this is the Zohar, the Korach people challenged you and they were destroyed by Hashem. There are others who challenged you who you forgave. Okay? And so the Zohar says the following. Avinu meis bamidbar. Our father died bamidbar. Don't read bamidbar. Or how's another way to... What's another way to read Bamidbar? Bamidaber. Okay? Through something which he did in speech. Through words. Okay? Who is Slavchad? Slavchad is, the Zohar says, Slavchad was a Rav. Now, Rav in the Torah terms is not a rabbi. It's a leader. But he was also, the reason why he wasn't the prince was because he was an Am Haaretz, which means that he wasn't knowledgeable in Torah, but he was a leader of some kind. People looked to him. Okay. Now let me ask you for a moment. Okay, I'm making assumptions about Shabbos. Whatever you learned about Mikoshesh Eitzin, what did you learn about if Slavchad is Mikoshesh Eitzin? What did you learn about it?
He did it to prove to the people, like, God is really serious. Look, I'm going to get in trouble. Please, B'nai Israel. I learned it.
Right. So okay. Now I'm going to ask you: did you buy that one?
No.
Why? Are you kidding? A guy's going to be purposefully violating Shabbos. You know how many times Shabbos is mentioned in the Torah itself?
Yitzhak,
15 times. Shabbos is 15 times. Ger, Yasom, and Almana aren't even mentioned 15 times. Okay, and they're mentioned a lot of times.
Right.
15 times, okay?
Okay.
You're going to buy that?
No, I never.
With all due respect to Rabbi Akiva. I'm sorry. Now, Rabbi Akiva's top student is the one who wrote the Zohar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Okay, so, hold on a second. So what does he say? He says that what was Tlachad? If you go back to Parshas Chukas, and you have the story of the snakes, right? What happened? People come, they complain to Moshe, right. And they say, hey, what's going on here? Is it Chukas? It's in Chukas, right?
Yeah.
Not Korach.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in Chukas. Okay. It's after the water incident. There's no water. So the complaint. Because what? If you let's go back. Let's look at it. No, it's not the end. Parakhaf Aleph. Okay. Pasuk Dalit, page 848. They go from Hor Hahor, Derech Yamsuf, around Eretz Edom, and Fatikzar Nefesh Ha'am Badarech, and the spirit of the people grew short on the way. Vayidaber Ha'am Ve'elohim Moshe, the people complained or spoke about Elohim and Moshe, saying, why did you take us out of Egypt to have us die in the desert? Ooh, look, there's the word Bamidbar. Interesting. Ki ein lechem ve'ein mayim, there's no bread and there's water. V'nafshenu katzav lechem laklokel, and we're sick of all this stuff. Now, you'll notice every other time in the Torah when the people complain, are they punished? When they say there's no water, are they ever punished? No, they're not punished. They have Moshe has a hard time dealing with it, but they're never punished. They're always given water.
The birds, Alfred Hitchcock, the birds.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
is that a punishment?
What? Well, they're given the birds. It's that people were. It's the people who were gorging themselves who were the ones who were punished. Okay. It says the meat is still in their teeth. Like, okay, guys, enough. Like, you should swallow. Okay. So what's the problem here? Is that the people spoke Ve'elohim uv Moshe. They spoke about God and about Moshe. So Hashem sends Es Hanachashim Hasirafim Vayinashchu Es Ha'am Vayamas Amrav Miyisrael. Now there are those who say, and I think I may have mentioned this last week briefly, but if not, I'll just, where, who class was last week? No, 2 weeks ago. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. That there are those who say that there are two things going on here. That there's a punishment about speaking about God, and there's a punishment against speaking about Moshe. Okay? One of them is the Nechashim, and one of them is the Serafim. God tells Moshe, make a Saraf, and put it on a pole. What does Moshe make? A Nachash. So those who say that the reason why the Nechashim were sent was because of what happened to, was because of speaking against God, and the Serafim were sent because of speaking against Moshe. Okay, there's explanations for all of that, but I can't get into it now. The bites of the Nechashim did not kill. The bites of the Seraphim would kill. Okay? How do you know that? Because when you look up at the Nachash, you obviously didn't die. So, and then you wouldn't die. Okay, it takes a little longer. And then they continue to break this down and say, Vayinashchu es ha'am, that those who bit the people were the snakes, and Vayamas Amrav Miyisrael was only because of the Seraphim action. Nachash was against talking against God, and Seraph was against talking against Moshe. God says, I forgive the people for what they talked about against me, because they talked against Moshe. Moshe, Aseh Lecha Seraph, because they need it for those who talked against you. Moshe says, well, if God's going to forgive, I'm going to forgive. So I'm going to make a Nachash, because I feel that it's God's kavod which can't be forgiven, so I'm going to make a Nachash. Vayamas Amrav, says the Zohar, is one person. And Am Aretz, who was a Rav, and that's Tzlachad, who spoke against Moshe, Bechet Omeis, in his own sin he died, and he wasn't part of the people of Korach. Moshe, you forgave him. So Moshe, you're the one who can give him the reprieve, and you can say that his property goes back to him. The people of Korach, they're gone. There's nothing. You didn't forgive him. God didn't forgive him. They all died, and that's it. Haim, Batehem, all gone. But look, Moshe, we're all here. It was just our father. He, if you want to say he snapped, or he did, you know, it was a moment thing. Bechet Omeis, it was his own sin. But you forgave him, says the Zohar. That was the sin of Tzlafchad. Now, when you look at it from that perspective, hey, now, it's like you wonder, Rashi, you must have known that, Rashi. Why couldn't you share that? It's not like Rashi never quotes the Zohar. So why do you have to get into our heads? I read this. Now, it could be that because I'd never seen this before, that I'm convinced. I'm just convinced. It could be Tzlafchad died from something else. It could be. It could be that none of this is correct. It could be it's all interpretations. I mean, A, it says Bamidbar here. The idea of Midaber also. Talk about things being hidden in there. Who reveals secrets? Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Yehuda Masero? The Zohar? The Kabbalah? That's the ultimate secrets. So if that's the case, then we have a different perspective of what it was that Tzlafchad did. And with that, all pieced together in a puzzle, you see a new idea. And what does it teach us? I don't know. I don't know what it teaches us about Tzlafchad per se. But it certainly teaches us about learning that we, especially with this idea of Mikoshei Sheitzim on Shabbos, he was trying to teach people, that never sat well with me. I'm like, come on, I don't get it. I really don't get it. But you come across this, you say, okay, makes sense. Korach, sin against Moshe. This, sin against Moshe. Because violating Shabbos on purpose to teach a lesson, sorry, that doesn't fly. And if you're going to ask me what kinds of people deserve their children to get punished, like, can you imagine? Dasan and Avira. Well, they weren't part of Korach, so because they had their own fight against you, Moshe. So please, we're Dasan and Avira's children. Can we please get land? Are you joking? Like, I mean, no way. Your dad, your parents were so horrible. But if this is the case, and Moshe forgave, and it wasn't such a big deal, Vayamas Amrav is referring to one individual, then you see that there are things that people can do which can be forgiven. If Moshe can forgive, if God can forgive, the children certainly don't need to be punished from the sins of the parents, especially if the sin of the parent was really my own thing. You know, a person is Mechal Shabbos is not just their own thing. It's destroying a community, if you think about it, mm-hmm. In a way. So, anyway, that's a new perspective on Tzlafchad, and that's what I wanted to share with you.